Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we take a look at your house. Maybe we can talk about energy credits. Maybe we can talk about condensation, indoor air quality. We can certainly talk about things that may be going wrong with your home. Our guests will probably have some pretty good advice and pretty good tips. Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, one of our guests. Chad, good to see you back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here, as always.
Yeah. And John Viner from the Energy Center of Wisconsin, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's always fun.
There are a couple of things. We have a three-story. Our home is a three-story. But on the second story, we can walk out onto a porch, and actually I can look down at the gutters that I have going around the house on that level. And there's a few. We have a gutter guard type situation, so we don't have a problem. But if you don't have that, it's probably a good time to be cleaning out gutters now. And why is it so important?
Well, it's important for a number of reasons. The most important, and I can actually attest to this personally, if you don't clean your gutters and they start to back up and overflow, then water is going to dump right next to your foundation. And when we've had some really heavy rains, which we had about 6 weeks ago, I think, we had 2 inches of rain in 1 hour. And I had water in my basement for the first time in 14 years. And I got a call from another client just yesterday who had water in her basement with the rains that just happened. And it turns out that the diverters at the bottom of her gutters had not been put down and reconnected. So the water was spilling again right at the corner of the foundation rather than being moved out anywhere from 3 to 6 feet or maybe even further away, depending on the grade around your home. So the gutters are really critical in the downspouts and moving the water away from the foundation. I would say, is just a matter of being responsible and helping not to make the problems with our lakes any worse. It is good to try to keep that water on your property and let it percolate into the ground.
Sure.
But you don't want it to be building up right around the house.
Makes good sense. Jim in Iron County has a question for you guys, so let's go there and see what's on Jim's mind. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Larry. I have a pole building. It's actually in Winnebago County, but it's 40 by 55. I've insulated with 2 inches of styrofoam, 3 feet below grade, and then 4 feet out from the building, and also placed 2 inches of styrofoam under a concrete slab. It has a 13.5 foot ceiling, and I intend to insulate the building with 2 inches of isocyanate foam. I'd like to know what the best and most efficient lighting and heating would be for that particular application.
That's interesting. Is this so the pole barn is going to be used 24/7 then throughout the year?
Good question. It'll only be used sporadically as a workshop, automotive shop.
Okay. Do you have natural gas on site?
No, propane.
Propane, okay. So since it is a shop and you're going to have employees working there, you're going to certainly going to keep it conditioned a fair bit of the time, I would assume. So
actually, it's a home shop. I'm an amateur.
Okay.
So it's just for yourself?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We always have options. I guess the gas furnace, the gas forced air furnace, if you, at this point, you have a slab down, so like a radiant floor system is really probably a little bit out of the question at this point since that's all insulated and in place. I guess your options then are propane or electric. Really, from an installation standpoint, those are the two that you're going to fall back to. So if we have opportunities to run duct systems still within that building, then a propane forced air furnace is an option, or it's maybe a propane boiler where we have a hydronic coil in the duct system. But at this point, the distribution appears to me going to be a forced air type of system rather than going with an electric heating source.
What about radiant propane?
So that would be using a boiler to heat water and then distribute that to baseboards, say, around the perimeter of the building or other on interior walls. So that's certainly an option, and having that radiant. And that may be good from an installation standpoint. You do have a 13-foot-high ceiling where duct systems could be there. But if you have lifts and other things that are tall that you don't want the duct system hanging down low, a radiant system is a great way to go. I think you're going to have to compare costs, but a radiant system low to the floor, keeping that concrete a little bit warmer if you're yourself or near the ground working on cars, I think that could be a fine way to go.
Well, maybe I misspoke or mistermed what I was talking about. Is there not a radiant system that uses an infrared radiator?
There certainly are portable heaters that will use infrared, or, you know, there are, you might find them, say, as you walk in a supermarket in a foyer or lobby area, and they have radiant heaters. Yes, you're right. And that could be a good way to go. This building is really insulated, so sizing that appropriately, I think, is going to be important, and regardless of the system, sizing for that building, so we're not necessarily, you know, overheating. It sounds like you've got a well-insulated building there.
Mm-hmm. And what about the lighting? What sort of lighting would be good to use, since it'll having to be come up to temperature during the winter and then coming down in temperature during the summer, essentially?
Well, there are some LED lights out on the market now, which are designed for exterior use, so they're not going to have temperature problems. And while LED lighting is something that is quite new in many respects, I mean, we've only started to see commercially available LED lighting fixtures that seem to be reliable and worth trying. In the residential market, I've only seen them really in the last 2 years, where we can actually get them. But I've been very happy with them. I know that in the city of Monona, we're looking at putting in some LED lighting fixtures out to illuminate some of our tennis courts and a skateboard park. And so I know that those fixtures are out there. People in the business are very excited about them because they're very low power usage relative to their light output. So I think if you're looking for a high efficiency fixture, that's one area to go.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
10 or 220 volt?
110 or 220?
I'm not sure.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Jim. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And speaking of Facebook pages, we have a Facebook question from Gina. How important is it to cover your outside AC unit in the winter?
Not very important, Larry. Most air conditioners are not covered through the winter, and they're kept off. They're designed for wind and rain. So we do see a couple that will cover it, and it may be good just from keeping the outside appearance in good shape. But from an operational standpoint, not necessary to cover those units.
Frankly, if you cover them and leave them covered, and you can get them to start rusting and everything else if they're not. You know, I've done it, but I had a neighbor who used to do it and wound up getting getting a kind of a messy air conditioner.
Okay.
Because he left it on too long, and it got water underneath, and it just sat in there, and then it didn't dry out, and then it rusted.
Yep.
We have lots of callers online, and Abe in Milwaukee. Maybe we can go there. Abe, hi. Thank you for calling. Abe, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I know that there's a great concern about the environmental impact of not the fluorescent, what's the new ones that have the
LEDs?
Well, no, actually that's the question. There's mercury in the the new ones that are that we're moving towards. What are those called?
LEDs.
Well, okay. Well, the LEDs, do those have mercury?
No, they don't. It's the compact fluorescents that have just a tiny bit of mercury in those.
Okay, so what's the environmental impact of LEDs once they cease to function?
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I don't have that answer, whether there's environmental impacts. I don't believe there's any environmental impacts in disposing of LEDs. Certainly could be wrong, but I haven't heard or read any in the literature that I've come across. So I think we're ahead of the game with LEDs related to the environmental impact. Not that the compact fluorescents, the tiny amount that's in those bulbs certainly is a concern, and we want to recycle them appropriately, but really there's only a small amount that escapes if those things are broke, which according to the research says that they're even, that's a much smaller amount compared to the electricity from the pollution from the generating plants if you had an incandescent, for example.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks, Abe, for calling. Susie in Madison, your turn.
Hi, I was calling with a question about gutters.
Okay.
We live in an L-shaped ranch, and the gutters where they meet in the center of the L, the water, instead of going down the gutter and the downspout, comes out there, and then right in that area we also get an ice dam in the wintertime. So I was just wondering how you fix that.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a common problem when you have a valley on a roof, and that's typically, I think that's probably what you're describing, where the valley comes down and water is coming down at a greater flow rate right in that diagonal valley, and then it overflows at the gutter.
Yes.
And so there are some shields or diverters that can be installed onto that corner to help prevent the water, when it's flowing as water, from overflowing the corner of the gutter. That's what I would recommend for the more temperate months of the year. The issue of ice damming, that has more to do with heat escaping from the home. It also could be related to the particular orientation of the home and, you know, what direction that corner is in relation to, say, the western sun, where you might get a little more snow melt than maybe typical. But either way, whether it's heat escaping or the position relative to the sun, again, you've got more potential water volume coming down at that one area. It could be that you'd have a little bit of damming, ice damming and snow melt all around the house, but it's more pronounced in that spot where there's a greater volume. And if I were just going to guess, typically ice damming is due to heat escaping. So there you might want to look at possibly having a home performance evaluation done to really determine how tight the house is, how much heat might be escaping into the attic, how good is the thermal layer in the attic to help to prevent heat from melting snow on the roof. These are things that, once addressed, will make the house more comfortable and energy efficient and hopefully eliminate the ice dams.
Yep.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager with the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests today as we talk about home renovation and repair. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network as we take a look at your home with John Viner and Chad Spade. And let's callers online. There's actually an open line or two. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can join in there. Email from John and Waldo: considering a geothermal system to replace my propane forced air furnace. Any thoughts, pro or con?
Well, I guess on the geothermal, I was going to initially say the space and the requirements for the wells, but they are doing a pretty good job in smaller areas and urban areas and putting in the pipes and the ground source tubing that's required. I guess you'd have to weigh the added cost to the geothermal system to into the calculation and compare that to your alternatives. That would be the disadvantage. I mean, the advantage to geothermal certainly is lower utility bills and having some good calculations and sizing done so that you can get a clear picture of what those savings are going to be for your circumstance. You know, there's the added cost. One consideration is putting that towards energy efficiency in the home. So if you're upping the cost of the geothermal, you could consider and weigh the options of moving that couple thousand dollars towards energy efficiency of that building shell within the building, and going with a standard furnace is one option to consider, certainly when you're making that decision.
I would agree very strongly with that. You always want to make the shell of the house as efficient as you can prior to investing in a major renewable energy system or anything big that's, you know, going to be, you're investing in it to reduce your energy use or to shift where your energy is coming from. But if the house is inefficient, that's your biggest opportunity always.
Yeah. So we put a geothermal in our home, but our home also was a complete gut job. So, I mean, it was completely stripped and inside. And so we put in high efficiency, high dense pack insulation and foam insulation and all new windows that are energy efficient, and then went with the geothermal as well. So we should probably... I don't know if we could make. I don't know if we could do much more than what we've done.
Right.
Yeah, you had a great opportunity there to go all the way and start from scratch essentially and make that the shell, the envelope of the house really, really strong and energy efficient, and then a nice efficient heating source such as a geothermal can go a long ways and have it for a long time.
Yeah, actually, it was passed as an Energy Star home. So,
excellent.
Tate and Millpoint, we move to you. Oops, just a second. Before we do that, let's go to Susan in Hermansville, Michigan. Susan, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This summer, I insulated my house vinyl siding and all new vinyl windows and doors. My question is about the windows. They are not an inexpensive window, and when it rained, water came down the glass and ran down into the track. So in the slide-bys, water came into that track that's on the inside part of the house that the window would slide into, and that filled up with water. And there are weep holes, so the water drains out. But I'm having a really hard time with the concept that water comes in there. And then on the double hungs, the same thing happens. The water comes down the glass and comes into the track that window sets down into. So I called the company, and they said, well, that's the way the windows are designed. But they had a field rep come out, and he actually poured a pitcher of water in there to prove to me that it would not overflow and run down my wall. And they said it will not freeze because the heat of the room keeps the frame warm. But I said, if that much water can get in, what about air? And he said, oh, well, air won't come in because it doesn't turn corners. But when the wind blows and I put my face by the window, I can feel cold air coming in. Also, I wondered, with all that moisture in there, what about mold and mildew? And what about heat loss? Have you heard of windows being designed this way, that they take in water but then they drain it out?
No, I haven't. I mean, I will say that windows are designed to get wet from the outside, and it is true that water will occasionally collect in the sill at the bottom, and there are weep holes for that water to get out. But when the windows are closed and they're locked and presumably sealed, water should not be coming into the window at that time. It's really all those other things are there to deal with the water that comes in when the window is open, because, you know, you have an open window and it rains, right, and water will come in, and you don't want it to cause any more of a problem than it needs to. So what it sounds like to me is that the flashing at the top of the window, when your house was re-sided and the windows were installed, it sounds like there's something that wasn't done. It's not uncommon for the flashing details on windows and doors to be overlooked by a contractor. And while I will say that certainly the industry standards dictate good flashing detailing on a home, inspectors don't look for this. It's not really something that the code is very particular about. And so, I would be persistent with the contractor, and it either sounds like a faulty window design, which is a possibility, or it's poor flashing detailing at the top of the window.
Okay, well, even if we had awnings extending out over, that would not, eliminate the problem if there was a wind with the rain. And then what about the air infiltration?
Well, I would agree that if water's coming in, then air is certainly coming in, and that, the notion that air doesn't turn a corner is preposterous.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too, and I called the company a couple times, and I felt they just got, kind of smart with me. So I emailed them back. I started documenting everything, and I said, well, I'm going to have a home evaluation done this winter and see, about heat loss. How do I pursue that? Who would I call?
Yeah, I guess you would take a look at the Focus on Energy website. So that'd be focusonenergy.com.
Okay.
And you can look for home consultants, or I think you might first go to a tab called Existing Homes and then find consultants. They have a nice searchable database. Put in your zip code. And you can find a few names there that'll come out and do that evaluation. Just, give your house a good look over, and then you can tell them about your concerns and focus on the windows, and they'll be able to tell if the windows leak substantially or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tate in Hill Point, now we are going to you. Thank you for waiting. Hello.
Yeah, I have a question about my windows. I'm on a new home, and we were excited to do a really nice insulating. We got blown-in insulation, and have this fear that our house is too tight, because I have pretty much all the time just that beaded up water along the bases, and it's starting, to create some mold along the sills. I'm wondering if I put plastic on the outside of my house, kind of as a storm window, would that help the problem?
How old is the house?
A year old.
So it's a year old, and so you went through one winter last winter, and that's when you noticed the condensation.
Yeah. Well, even all the time. I mean, cool weather, and it's happening again this season, and every day I walk around the house and wipe down the windows. So
even recently here, even in the cooler weather, it's not quite winter yet where we have strong cold temperatures, but even now you're reaching essentially the dew point on that glass on the inside, and you're having to wipe that up.
Definitely. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, it sounds like there's some sources of moisture in the house that we've got to address first. Really, that glass temperature shouldn't be below the dew point, which is at the temperature at which the moisture in the air comes out, and you see it as a liquid. So we're going to have to take a strong look at the house and find out, where's the sources of moisture? Are we drying clothes in the basement? Is the dryer vented appropriately? Do we store a core of wood in the basement and it's drying down there? Aquariums and plants. So we have to start adding those up and seeing what we can do to eliminate and reduce. That would be my first guess, because it's pretty early to have strong condensation, and it sounds like it's pretty rampant or pretty prevalent in your case.
Yeah.
I would also add that the bathroom fans where you shower, it's important to test those to make sure that they're, in fact, moving humidity out of the bathrooms when you're creating it. And then when you're cooking, that your stovetop is moving humidity to the exterior as well. It would be particularly important to have good source ventilation in a home like yours. And then, you know, once you've made sure that all those systems are working and that, as John said, you don't have unnecessary sources of additional humidity, then you might be looking at some sort of whole house dehumidification. And it's not that your house is built too tight. It's just that because it has been probably fairly well air sealed, as it should be, then you're going to have systems that help to control the humidity in the home. You know, whereas an old leaky house, we often add humidity to those homes.
Right.
A new tight home often has to be dehumidified, and that's just the physics of a home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one follow-up question. Do you have a, is it a full basement or a crawl space?
Well, I was going to, yeah, there's a couple more details here. It's just a crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 4-foot crawl space, and it's, you know, it's earth bottom. There's no, you know, cement down there, so it's the earth bottom. We did the gravel all around the 4-foot frost wall, and then we covered it with black plastic. We do have a barrel down there that with a sump pump in it that pumps water out. And there's something's going on down there, because I don't know if we've got a random little spring or something, but more we will get water coming in there, and this pump is constantly plugged in and will pump pump water out. And with this recent snow and the melt, you know, it's pumping water out today.
Yeah. So
however, when I go down there, it does not feel wet or moist to me. The cement walls on the side are dry. The joists running, the floor joists running across, and all the wood down there is dry. So when I go down there, I don't get this feeling like, oh, I'm in this moist, wet environment.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe it's because of that. Not being, mm-hmm. it's only covered with that black plastic, that's not enough, and that's contributing to this problem on the windows as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that it is. So if you know that pump's running full time and occasionally you see water or there's some signs of water under the plastic, that's what we have to deal with first and foremost, and it is connected to your house and your window condensation. I can pretty much assure you of that. And whether it's the sole source, many of these problems have multiple sources or multiple problems that need to be solved, but that's your first one.
All right. There you go.
I appreciate for you your time, and just what would be your first tip on the floor down there? Take up the black plastic and cover it with gravel, get cement down there, or...
Yeah, you're going to have to take a look at the grading and that source of that water and see if there's anything we can do about that. And then the plastic is going to need to be sealed to the foundation wall all along the entire perimeter and all the seams. So where's that water coming from? Can we help grade the house so it's not coming down into that crawl space, and then have a really good plastic vapor barrier down there that's sealed on all edges?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would just add that in the city of Madison, they will not allow a home to have the dirt floor with just gravel. I mean, they require that the plastic be put down and properly sealed, and then that there be cement poured over it to make sure that plastic never gets damaged. You know, mm-hmm. cement does not prevent the moisture from rising up. The moisture will come right through the cement floor. As it does in many old homes that don't have a vapor barrier under them. So one other thing, too, I just want to add is that you do have to be concerned about radon when you don't have a sealed floor like that. And if that is an open sump pit, then, you know, if you do have radon in that piece of land where your house happens to be built, it will come up into the home. And since you do have a really tight home, you have to be all the more concerned about it. So I would recommend that you have the house tested for radon.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Gary and Rhinelander, we're on to you. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. Hey, I just moved into a home that was built in 1974, and it has all these electric baseboard heaters. Each one of these heaters are, you can control them separately and such. And I'm just wondering if from 1974 the electric consumption in those would be more than one of these like Eden Pure that you can actually plug into the wall and control it that way. Which would be more energy efficient, you believe?
They're going to be, essentially, they could be pretty equal, right? So electric heat is going to be electric heat. And sounds like you have the ability, even though the portable units are portable, you can move them to room and heat the locations that you would like to keep warm, but you can do that exact same thing with controlling each individual baseboard. So certainly don't invest in a second electric heating source for the home and think that we're going to have any gains there. Just use that electric, if we're going to keep it, utilize that electric baseboard heat wisely. And if we have rooms that we're not utilizing, certainly just keep those settings very low and keep the rooms that you're in comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because, yeah, if we decide to buy the place, that next year I'd put in a wood pellet stove on the outside or something, or is there something better that's more reasonable in price?
Well, if we just want to heat certain areas within the room, and a pellet stove is certainly fine, depending on the layout of the and the floor plan of the home. But if we have that in a central area and you keep a little electric heat on, some back bedrooms that just enough so that we need it, and you want to utilize a pellet stove, I think that's a great way to go.
All right. Thank you very much, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. Matt in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Matt.
Hello, guys. Thanks a lot. Great show, as always.
Thank you.
Quick question for you. I've got white, cottony, fluffy, blown-in fiberglass insulation in my attic right now. I want to say it's like R48 or something like that. The home's about 3 years old. It was fully sealed. I had the walls all spray foamed, 2 inches of spray foam with then batting in the walls. I want to get some more insulation up in the attic. I'm getting an ice damming issue over the master bedroom area. It was recommended that I go with a blown-in cellulose over the top of the blown-in fiberglass. Couple of questions on that subject. One is, will that mat down the fiberglass and I'll lose the R value from the fiberglass, number one. Number two, do you get better sealing out of blown-in cellulose and get rid of, you know, that wind-washing kind of effect? I guess the blown-in fiberglass tends to not hold up as well in the cold temperatures.
Yeah, I think Chad and I are both eager which one wants to take.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, it's cellulose, certainly blown over fiberglass, will compress the fiberglass and reduce its R value. But that's not where you need to go first, right, is adding more fluffy stuff to the attic space, right? We have an R48. Every house in the world that's built correctly or operates correctly works just fine with that level of R value in their attic. So there's something else going on. So we have to kind of take a step back and identify exactly where that heat is being lost, and making sure the integrity of what's there is good and performing as designed. And then it's air leakage, it's holes, right? It comes back to heat. Just once we have a plumbing wall or a bath fan even, or there's light fixtures in the master bedroom bath, all those, the heat just rises.
Yeah, that's let me jump in here. We did go one step back, and when we sealed the lids, you know, the top side in the attic, I had a spray foam guy come in. He had all the can lights and all of the venting and the ducting and all of that good stuff. My inspector came in, or the insulation guy came in, shot some pictures, and it looks like some of the fixtures were only half foamed. So we have a feeling that we're losing some heat up into the attic we've got a lot of can lights in the house. And we feel that we're losing some heat both from the can lights and also from some of the heating ducts weren't fully sealed around them. So we think that's where some of this leakage is coming into the attic.
So you got heat ducts in the attic too?
Yeah. We've got a split system. We've got a furnace in the basement, and we have a furnace on the second floor, which takes care of the second floor.
Sounds like it's time not to guess anymore. So we need to know. And that's the way we know what's leaking and what's not leaking is a blower door test. If and maybe you've had one. If you had a good contractor, he's going to not be guessing at what leaks and what doesn't.
We did a blower door test, and the envelope is pretty damn tight. Pardon my language. It's pretty darn tight. I forgot the number. I want to say 2,400 CFM on about a 4,000 square foot house.
Mm-hmm.
That sound about right and sound pretty tight?
That's reasonable.
Okay. So we do know that we have some leakage around some can lights. We know we have some leakage around the heat ducts in the attic.
Yeah, that's the bigger problem. It's not the fluffy stuff in the attic, right? So don't worry about adding more fluffy stuff until you've addressed that other concerns.
Yeah, I think the idea is I'm going to get my foam guy back in. He's going to redo this and get it done right. Some of the spots are tricky to get to, but we're going to get those areas sealed off really well and then come back and insulate in the attic. So really, I guess my question really boils down to, have you heard of cellulose being blown in over fiberglass?
Yep. Certainly have heard of that, but we do compromise the fiberglass. There's no question to it. And I mean, we will compromise that R value, then we can pay and add more cellulose to make up for that degraded R value within the fiberglass. But, yep, so can be done. I don't recommend it. I think that there's other things happening, and have that insulating contractor use a blower door to make sure he's got it right. That way he can prove to you that he's made your house tighter. That's what's so cool about it. A lot of people do work in the attic, and it's all hidden. It's unseen. This puts a number to it up front, and you know when you pay the bill that you got something out of it.
Yep, there you go.
The benefits, sorry, but one last question. Benefits of fiberglass over the cellulose. I understand the fiberglass, I don't want to call it wind washing, but it doesn't perform very well when it's cold out. There's a lot of air flow through that fiberglass?
The insulating value of fiberglass in some studies have shown the R value degrades faster than cellulose in colder weather. So that's one aspect or characteristic. Two, when we have the insulation out at the eaves and we have soffit venting and the wind blows and you're on a hill or just have some strong winds, or fiberglass is going to be a little bit lighter. And certainly if we don't have the venting system, the vent chutes and blocking at the eaves above the top plates and the vent chutes in place, then the wind can blow that loose fiberglass away from the top plate along the perimeter of the house, which again can aggravate heat loss and condensation. But if it was done correctly up front and there's blocking the way good practices ask for, fiberglass won't blow away from that soffit.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at your home today with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Taking a look at your home. Jerry in Franklin has a question for you guys, so we're going to go there next. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, good morning. I have a 1984 ranch that was built by the builder, and he owned it for 14 years. I have a fireplace in there. It's got two knobs. One obviously controls the fan. I'm not sure what the other one does, but that leads to the question I have. My wife loves fires, but it heats that room up real nice, but that heat doesn't get around to the rest of the ranch. And I'm just wondering if there's an insert that I can buy that would be more efficient and utilize all that wood that I'm paying for.
Hmm. So you have it's an open hearth fireplace right now?
Correct.
Yep. So certainly an insert's going to go a long ways in helping to heat the home and keep the house, or keep the heat in the house and not up that chimney. There's no doubt that that's going to help create that space to be warmer. Whether it makes it around the corner or whether we're able to heat back places or rooms, a little bit further away in the back bedrooms, probably not, regardless of the insert. Though I think that you're going to use less wood, and it's certainly recommended if you're going to use it throughout the winter months to have an insert, and you're going to notice a big difference in how well it heats up the room and close vicinity of that fireplace.
And I already have that now. That's why I'm trying to weigh that financially, if it's worth buying something like that.
Oh, so you do?
And still be able to enjoy the fire, watching a fire.
Right. So you do have an insert right now?
No, I have a regular fireplace, but it heats up that room real well. It just doesn't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yep. No, an insert probably is going to expand the space that you're going to be able to heat. I think it's going to do a better job for less wood. So if you do burn a lot of wood, it's more efficient way to go, absolutely.
But you're not going to be looking at the fire then. All right.
They have not the big fire. They do have inserts with some pretty big windows within the door. So it's certainly going to, the appearance is going to be downsized.
Yep, there you go. Thanks, Jerry, for calling. Appreciate your call. John in Wausau, on to you now. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 20 to 25-year-old gas hot water heater, and it works fine. But what I was wondering, I've been looking at some point-of-use hot water heaters. Considering that I have to the cost of a gas hot water heater and replacing one that's perfectly fine, it doesn't really pay. However, my gas hot water heater is vented right now through a metal liner that goes up to a block chimney. And if I were to get, say, a point of use or some direct vent, and I could eliminate my chimney, take it out, and thereby eliminate that hole in my roof. And that's what I wanted to know, if that actually would pay to replace a perfectly good hot water heater, gas hot water heater, just to get rid of my chimney.
Well, there are some good reasons to move towards a power vented hot water heater, and you are correct in being aware of that potential. And I'll tell you, the reason is primarily that chimney that you have now just relies on the hot exhaust from the old hot water heater to waft up through that block chimney stack, and that's all fine, except that that hot water heater does not generate a lot of excess heat in its exhaust. And if your house goes under negative pressure at times due to the exhaust fans that are running, you may have some backdrafting at that chimney. And that's a problem that we can resolve by going to a power vented hot water heater or an instant hot water heater. And so whether or not it's going to pay back with increased efficiency, that depends. I mean, there are a number of options out there now. There are condensing hot water heaters that can be purchased that are very high efficiency. But again, there is a health concern that you will be addressing and eliminating by doing away with that chimney. And so for that reason alone, I would recommend it.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Dan in Fond du Lac, on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. I have a Cape Cod, very steep roof, asphalt shingle. And on occasion I have ice damming. Just got back from Vermont area, and on some of the homes I've seen out there, about 3 feet up from the base of the roof, they have metal flashing. Is that worthwhile to do, or?
Well, there is a reason for that. The metal flashing helps to basically encourage the snow melt on the edge there, and to keep the snow from collecting on the edge of the roof. And so it's just utilizing solar energy primarily to help resolve that problem, and to eliminate or reduce any ice damming that you might have.
Whether we use ice and water shields, right, or a metal flashing, it also just is able to protect that roof, right, from leakage if an ice dam occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it doesn't sound like you have a roof problem necessarily. You've get some ice damming, and you're just concerned that maybe at some point you'll get it back into the interior.
That's right. And I guess another question would be, would it be cost prohibitive?
Yeah, I think generally we try to tackle those ice dams from a little different approach and try to get the root cause, which is, as Chad mentioned earlier, just the excess heat or heat from the house contributing or adding to the solar gains, and together it's melting the snow and creating some ice dams. Now, if we all get a little bit of ice built up on the gutters, so we do have to gauge how big of an ice dam and to the extent of the problem. But if we do have, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 inches thick ice on the roof, and we know it's starting to back up water and truly acting as a dam, and we have liquid water backing up our roof system, then we certainly have an issue to address. And those Cape Cods, do you have like knee wall attic areas then?
That's right.
In the sides, and is the insulation up on the roof rafters, or is it on the knee wall, the vertical knee wall?
It's on the vertical knee wall, mm-hmm. But then there's on the roof rafters, you know, there is some insulation in there, but I don't think that's causing the problem, because the ice, the melt seems to be happening further down.
Well, yeah, it's hard to gauge sometimes, especially with those Cape Cods. Usually an ice dam, the water accumulation is a result of snow melt throughout that entire roof system, because it all runs downhill and hits down to that gable end. So there's often not even enough snow right at the eave to create an ice dam. That water has to come from higher up on that roof system. So we've got to look at addressing that heat loss before you would invest in re-roofing or adding anything additional, like some will add heat tape, for example, to prevent ice dams. Before we start messing or changing the roof structure, especially if it's not to the extent of a very strong problem, if you have, you know, if it happens on occasions throughout a year or every few years, you've got a little time to step back and take a look and make that house a little more energy efficient at the same time, reduce that ice dam.
Mm-hmm. Well, then an additional question then would be above that knee wall where I think it's probably 2x6 roof rafters that go, how would you insulate that? You need airflow through that, don't you?
Generally, I would recommend just dense packing that whole cavity with cellulose and eliminating the vent system in there, and just making sure we do a really great job on the details and we get cellulose insulation in there nice and tight. And then we do have to independently vent the top attic, a little small cavity on the top, and independently vent the knee wall areas so that we have cold air washing through there if we keep that as unconditioned space.
Oh, okay. Well, and I do have that. I have venting up on the top attic and on the knee wall areas.
Oh, good, good. Mm-hmm. So then you could feel comfortable having a contractor or an insulator come in and address some of the air sealing and the heat loss, because those knee walls are notorious for underneath the floor system to house air from the first floor gets into the ceiling, and those floor joist cavities are open to the knee walls and throw heat. And sometimes it's not evident if you got a floor system in there and you use it for storage, but you got to pull up those floorboards and stick your hand underneath that knee wall and reach inside your house and think, boy, this is a nice path for the heat to leave, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, good.
Well, and the best way to see it, too, is if you do have either an insulation contractor with a blower door and an infrared camera, or you have a home performance evaluator come over and work with you to resolve it, you're going to see when they put on the blower door and fire up that infrared camera that you've got empty cavities and places where cold air is moving, and that helps you to fix the problem, and then you don't have to disturb cavities that don't show any evidence of that problem.
Oh, very good. Well, I appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Dan. Appreciate it. And John, you know, let's see here. There you go. You got a quick question for us here.
Well, yes, I do. Regarding a 25-year-old two-story home, replaced the furnace last year with the high-efficiency multi-stage furnace, gas forced air, and this home has always seemed to have an issue. We bought it 3 years ago, where the upstairs is always much cooler than the main level. In some cases, even the basement is warmer than the first floor, and that would seem to me to be the opposite of what you would expect in a home like this. And we did re-insulate the attic a year ago. There was 12 inches of fiberglass, and I think they put 12 inches of cellulose on top of that. And that didn't make any difference to the temperature conditions in the upstairs of the house. So any thoughts?
It could be the heat flow, the actual, you know, heating system itself. And I don't know if anything's been done to try to test what sort of flow rate you're getting from registers on the second floor, but that can certainly be a culprit. And then consistent with what we've said before, you know, the insulation up in the attic, whether it's fiberglass or cellulose, is really just going to filter the air if there are places that air is leaking into those layers of loose insulation. And so what happens is a lot of homeowners, you know, conscientiously either add insulation or pay someone to add insulation, but unless you go around and seal up all of the little holes that air is leaking through the ceiling into the attic, you know, you can have 4 feet of loose fill up there and it's still going to find its way through that material if it is able to move into it. So air sealing is very important.
And our guests will be with us right up until 12:30 today. You'll be able to hear from Chad Spate and John Viner. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There are more and more green options for home repair, remodeling, and construction, but how do you know what's the best choice for your project? My guests today know all about that and a whole lot more. They're Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Chad and John are here until 12:30. They have a lot of creative ideas for taking care of your home and the environment at the same time. And as always, they'll be happy to answer your questions as well. We'd love to hear from you. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And you can also leave a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Click like while you're there. Hope you'll do that. You'll get regular updates on upcoming show topics. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Taking a look today at home renovation and repair. A lot of energy issues with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. So it's great to have them back. They come by every couple of months to talk with us. And this month, no exception. If you have a question, call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. We have an email from Miranda, guys, from Milwaukee. We have a 100-year-old Victorian house with original light fixtures that dim. What kinds of non-incandescent bulbs do you recommend? LED or halogen? What about a fixture with a candelabra fittings? Replacing the fixtures is not an option. So they can't replace the fixtures.
Well, if you're just putting in a bulb, I mean, there are bulbs that are rated for dimming. So, for example, there are fluorescent bulbs that can be dimmed. However, when you have an LED, and there are LED bulbs that can be dimmed, but when you have these low-energy, kind of high-tech bulbs, they require a better dimmer than the old-fashioned kind of rheostat dimmer. So there has to be an electronic dimmer. And so that's something where an electrician would need to probably install a new dimmer switch to enable those low-energy bulbs to be used. Other than that, you're primarily looking at things like halogen bulbs. And certainly one way to reduce your energy consumption is simply to dim a traditional bulb.
Yep. But there you go. We have Nick in Milwaukee. He has a home built in 1940 of the heating duct in the shower. I'm worried about the possibility of mold. Should I cover or put a cover on it? Also, I want to put more insulation in the attic. Should I just put it over the original popcorn insulation or get rid of the old stuff?
So a heating duct in the shower, so maybe it's... And you said in the shower?
Yeah.
In the shower, so blowing warm air supply heating duct into the shower. And yeah, I guess if it's been there that long and if it's working, it's working. But if we've got moisture and concerns, we've got to take a look at that. So I guess you'd have to see it and understand whether water's getting down there and we can find rust in the ductworks and in the basement, et cetera, to understand if there's really a problem.
Okay.
And insulating over in an attic.
Popcorn insulation, yeah.
Yeah, feel free to insulate over that with any material you would like.
Carolyn in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am wondering if I'm getting a new roof, and I'm wondering if the color of the roof makes a difference. If it's really light white, does that reflect heat real well in the summer?
Yes, it does. Yeah, the color of a roof has a major impact on the impact on the home and how, you know, the materials in the home. A dark roof is going to absorb a lot of heat, and it's going to make the attic hotter and the temperature of the materials underneath it hotter. And in a modern, reasonably well to very well insulated home, there would be no advantage to absorbing that heat to try to capture it, say, in the wintertime, particularly when there's snow on our rooftops often. So generally we recommend going to a lighter colored roof because it will reflect the heat year-round, and that is consistent with longevity of the building and reducing heat gain in a space where we don't want heat gain.
My other question about the roof is roof ventilation part of roofing or not? Putting ventilation in the eaves, is that part of a roofing job?
Yeah, generally that's part of the roof where he's going to make sure that there's venting, that the roof system is adequately vented.
Okay, my other question was, you were discussing one time the difference between fiberglass and vinyl windows. Is there a real difference in getting the fiberglass? Is that a better window?
Fiberglass is, I would argue fiberglass is kind of the high-tech material for windows and doors right now. We recommend a fiberglass exterior. It has advantages over many other materials because it's very durable, it will hold paint, and it does not move around when it gets cold or hot. It is a very, very stable material. And so that's important both for being able to hold paint and also for being able to maintain good weather seals on the edges, which is, of course, important for a window or a door so that you don't have excessive air leakage. What happens with vinyl is one of the most unstable products. It shrinks a lot when it gets cold, and it expands when it gets hot. So if a window gets cold in the wintertime and it shrinks, it's actually going to make it more likely to have gaps around the window where you need to have a good air seal. So that's problematic, and I do not recommend vinyl for that reason. It's also more difficult to repair. You can't really paint it. I mean, it's kind of a low-cost product. It also is very polluting to produce the product, and I just don't like it.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's same with the door then, huh? Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. I mean, fiberglass doors, again, tend to be the high-end, not necessarily most expensive. And, I mean, even fiberglass windows, they're not necessarily more expensive, but it is just a better material. I do a lot of work with one particular window manufacturer, and their Builder series, which is their lower-cost series, has a fiberglass exterior. They've been using it for 15 years, and it actually has a better energy rating because the fiberglass is superior to the standard aluminum that they use on their high-end product. So, you know, it's a cheaper window that gives you better R values. So
there you go.
I think fiberglass is the way to go.
Thanks for calling, Carolyn. We have a Facebook question from Cornelia. Why do we not use roller shades on the outside of the windows as like they do in Europe? They keep the house cooler in the summer, warmer in the winter, not to mention they help with securing your home. I loved them growing up in Germany.
Yeah, that's a great, I think it's a, I mean, I don't know that much about it other than that it's a good idea, that it's very hard to obtain such a thing in the States. And so it is the appropriate place to try to provide additional protection on a window or a door. Well, this is a window, but, you know, it helps because it makes the glass warmer, which is going to reduce the potential for things like condensation. You know, in the United States, we use blinds and shades and drapes and things like that. And in a high-performance home, it actually makes the glass colder. And so then you're more likely to have condensation problems. But if you have some sort of a storm or a shutter on the exterior, and these sorts of blinds can be very good at providing thermal and solar protection when you want it, then I think it's a great idea.
Great idea, but it costs you a fortune, probably, because there's nobody here who's doing that kind of work. And so,
correct.
Yeah, there you go. But an interesting concept for sure. Mark in Glenwood City, on to you now. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've got a 15-year-old furnace put in when the house was built, and when it is very cold in the winter, especially below 20 degrees, the furnace shuts off. And I've found that if I turn the thermostat off for 5 minutes or so, turn it back on, the furnace will fire back up and run for a while and eventually shut back off.
And your question is, why does it do that, I bet?
Right, The intake and exhaust run out the west side of the home, and it seems a lot worse when it's windy, but it has done it when it hasn't been windy.
Okay, so it is a high efficient furnace with PVC pipe coming out the side of the home.
Correct.
So two things come to mind. When it sounded like when it was really cold outside, and maybe it's running for longer duration, that if the airflow is low or for other reasons it's tripping on a high limit switch where it's getting too warm in the combustion chambers, and it's a safety switch shutting itself down, and then after a few minutes that limit switch is resetting and you're able to operate the furnace again. So that's one possibility. If it's due to wind, there is a pressure switch in those units that, if the wind is blowing into the exhaust pipe, for example, just so, and could be, you know, air currents can take any which direction, so it's always hard to know whether it's pointed in a good direction or not, the pressure switch will trip. And basically it's another safety switch to shut that unit down if the exhaust gases aren't have the ability to get out of the home effectively.
Okay. Is it advisable to put an elbow? The two pipes, one has an elbow. I believe it's the intake. Could I put an elbow on the exhaust if that is the problem?
You could. Usually the intake pipe has an elbow that turns down, and we pull the intake into the furnace from lower, from a lower position than the exhaust, which sticks up and then maybe points out with an elbow or points out towards the house and maybe is elevated a foot or 10-12 inches above the intake. As long as we're not pointing that exhaust down, I think that you'd be okay, and you could point it to one side or the other.
Okay, because right now the intake is pointed down, the pipes come out side by side, and the intake is just straight out.
Or the exhaust is just straight out.
I'm sorry, the exhaust comes straight out, correct.
Yep, so you could maybe use two elbows, one up on the exhaust and then another one to make a right angle. And you could even put a 6-inch piece of pipe on that end. I think that we would probably still, in manufacturer's specifications, with a little bit of an attachment. So, you know, you're not just putting one elbow pointing up where we get water and rainwater coming down inside. You're putting a second elbow on top so that it turns maybe 90 degrees from the direction it is.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. There you
and
go.
If it is the high limit, the heat limit switch where it's just running too long, would it reset itself and turn back on, or would I have to turn the thermostat off and turn it back on myself?
Good question. If the thermostat's still calling for heat, then it should reset and try to reoperate.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Thomas in Lake Geneva. On to you now. Hi, Thomas.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a little cottage up in northern Wisconsin, Bayfield County.
Okay.
And it's fairly well insulated. I mean, it has 4 inches in the wall and 12 inches in the attic. I'm redoing the floors. Below is just a crawl space. And does it make any sense to put down insulation on the floor, like that pink, I don't know what it's called, polystyrene, you know, what they usually put on the walls, it comes in.
So you mean to put it on underneath the floor?
Yep, a foam board in the floor joist.
And then put the organized strand board over that and redo the floor.
It's certainly a possibility. I mean, if this is a cottage that is it a ventilated crawl space under that right now, or what is?
It's a very ventilated crawl.
Okay, space. Very ventilated. So
do you have water pipes down there? I guess is the next question.
Yeah.
So. Well, the water pipes usually go off in the winter, but you know, occasionally I may get up there to use it again, and I'm thinking. Sometime in the future to make it a year-round home.
Okay.
And I thought if that would help my heat efficiency. I mean, it's not very expensive to put that stuff down there, so.
Right. So certainly the most cost-effective approach based on what you have, the fact that this is a cottage and that it is a very ventilated crawl space, will probably be to insulate the actual floor cavities as you're planning to do, and potentially, you know, put down a solid layer of insulation board, as you were suggesting, on, you know, either the top of the floor or the underside of the floor to try to seal it up really well. And essentially make the floor of the house the floor or the bottom of the envelope of the house. That is a possibility. If you were really wanting to do it in a way that is the most effective and advisable way for a home that would be used year-round, you would instead insulate, you would seal up that crawl space and you'd make it similar to a basement. You'd make it semi-conditioned. You would seal the walls. You would put a vapor barrier on the floor that is, or insulate the floor of the crawl space, and seal that up. And then you would have more of an insulated, semi-conditioned crawl space, which would be good for the water pipes. It allows you access to those floor cavities without having to worry about puncturing the envelope of the building. You know, but that is a more costly way to go.
And that's,
there are many more details to it.
Yes, but in place of doing that, is the other thing a reasonable alternative?
Yeah, certainly foam board, you know, a couple inches of foam board cut and placed in between the floor joist and... Sealed. Sounds like you're breaking up a little bit, but it's a reasonable thing to do. Absolutely.
Yeah.
As long as we're not afraid of making that crawl space colder, right? That's what we're going to do.
Thanks very much for calling. Caller Wayne from Green Bay. You know, this goes back to the caller who had the condensation on the windows question. He was wondering, what about running the circulating fan on the furnace 100% of the time? May not always work, but it's at least a cheap technique to try to eliminate that condensation problem.
Yeah, that's certainly is a step that we can take. I don't find that it works often, but it is a common recommendation to try to push it to the next level, because when we're taking that step, we're trying to keep the window warmer and we're trying to put more heat to that window. So it depends on the register placement, whether we're really getting more heat to the window and keeping it warmer by operating that fan. So that's one. When we get to that point, that's one of about a half a dozen things that we've got to put into place at the same time.
All right, on to Jeff in Evansville then. Jeff, hi.
Hey, how you doing? I'm up in the attic.
You're up in the attic, okay.
Let me take off my dust mask.
No, don't do that.
But I've actually got, and you'd be proud of my custom-made one-inch rigid foam air baffles that I've got on top of my, going right past my top plate, and then I sprayed in foam on top of the top plate.
All right, take a picture and put it on Facebook for us. So we can...
All right, but my real question, now I've got to go down into the basement. So I've got a 1870s farmhouse stone cellar. The gas-fired furnace is in the cellar, but what I'd like to do is try to seal that floor up rather than try to insulate the walls. It's a very irregular surface.
Okay, so, insulate the first floor.
Yeah,
floor system.
What I was looking at, I saw that they've got this, the bubble wrap with the reflecting surfaces on both sides. They say that gets you, just using that gets you an R17.
Yeah, don't believe it.
I didn't believe it.
Okay, good.
I wanted to believe it.
So the old house, old stone foundation house, and you're going to make that basement colder than it is because you're not worried about freezing pipes or people doing laundry or storage down there, right? You're okay with all that, and we're going to put insulation into the floor system the best we can, and we can fit it in there well enough around any ducts or water pipes and plumbing. We think we can do a good job to be effective in the floor joists. And then if that's the case and we simply heat the first floor and we keep that a moderate temperature and we're comfortable, that's not a bad way to go. We can do that, whether we use, we like a rigid foam such as the last caller. I think you're going to probably get a little more R value and effectiveness out of that, maybe a little more soundproofing. I think it would just be...
Now, should I cut those and fit the foam right up in between the joists, or should I fill the joists? The other thing I was thinking was filling the joists with a bat and then going on the bottom of the floor joists with like 1-inch rigid foam and then just tape the joints.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to go. You're going to maximize the R value that way, and then we don't want to necessarily blow it with a fiber, cellulose or fiberglass, because of just maintenance down the road. Someday you're going to want to get in there, right, to run wires or do some repair down the road. So we want to just, if we put foam board up, we can cut that. We can pull down a bat, and it's easy repairable.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, the last thing is, since the furnace is down there, should I try to enclose that furnace and make it even colder, or can I just run that furnace in a completely unheated space at that point?
Well, you could...
I've got some ducting running down there, and I'm going to insulate the ducts, too.
Okay, so it sounds like you're active, especially as you said in your first...
I'm more than active. I'm miserable. I'm ready to cry.
Put that dust mask back on. So. Now, really, air sealing and insulating that duct system is going to be important, and I think that basement's going to float a little bit anyway. Long as we've insulated and air sealed the ductwork, that furnace can sit down there and run.
Yeah.
All right. And then the last thing is, how crazy do I have to go on the band joist? What I did is I put an inch and a half rigid foam and then foamed it in place up against the on top of the sill and up against the band joist.
Right, and then you're going to have fiberglass bats stuffed up in there anyway, right?
Right.
So
yeah,
you're good to go.
Yeah, you're good. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow. Tell you what, quick question here. What are the advantages of a steel roof as opposed to traditional shingles? Are the advantages or disadvantages in terms of energy? Anything?
Energy, well, I'm not sure about energy. I mean, certainly you have a material that can last longer if it's maintained. And when you have a metal roof, you can recoat it if necessary, whereas once an asphalt shingled roof starts to fail, you've basically got to tear it off. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the biggest advantage. But from an energy perspective...
It's similar to a white roof, for example. The you get reflectivity, which helps us in the summertime where we want to keep the attic cooler. We live in a heating dominated climate. We have summer a couple of months where it's really warm out of the year. So the little bit of savings that we have is going to be very, very small from a reflective roof. Personally, so we wouldn't do it from an energy saving standpoint. We'd do it for the longevity.
Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, one of our guests today. The other, John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. Guys, thank you so much. We'll see you in a couple months.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thank you, Larry.
Appreciate it very much. And thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.